So who's ready to talk about the rest of the 49ers roster, the other 89 players in the building, starting with Brock Purdy, going all the way down to the rookies, somebody like Malik Mustafa. We could even get more in depth with this show today. I know that people are looking forward to this because I know that people are sick and tired of hearing about the circular drama involving one particular receiver. So I'm going to try to bring some of my knowledge to you today. I've been at all 12 of the 49ers practices so far. I was at all the OTA sessions as well. I've been around since the draft. So, I mean, I've been around for several seasons now. I think this is season 8 for me with the covering the 49ers. So I have the context, but I also, I think, have been on the scene here for this rookie class and this latest iteration of players. So we can talk in depth about this depth chart right now. I'll be probably able to answer some questions in a little bit, but I think I have a lot of notes in my head as far as who has been improving, who I probably would want to see a little bit more from, what the roster is starting to shape up as when we talk about a 53-man cutdown, which is going to be happening at the end of this month. And of course, there's the first preseason game against the Tennessee Titans in Nashville on Saturday. And that first preseason game is going to be important for a lot of players on the bubble of the roster, because evaluation in an actual in-game scenario is critical for positions like linebacker, positions like running back, because they don't tackle live to the ground during the practices. So real football is coming. And although a lot of fans say, well, the preseason's boring, it's not boring to the group of men who are out there fighting for their livelihoods, fighting to stay in the National Football League. It's not all stardom at the top. It's not all negotiations for contracts that might be $26 million per year or $28 million per year or $30 million per year. Sometimes it's about just making a job and making it happen at the NFL level. And that's going to be the case for a lot of the players on the field when the 49ers play the Titans on Saturday. So let's start here. Why don't we just go at random and start with defensive tackle. Yeah, let's start with defensive tackle. I think this is going to be good. Defensive tackle, if you could see here on the roster, is a position that has contenders for playing time to enter the rotation, but maybe not too many spots open. Because Javon Hargrave has got one of the four defensive tackle rotational spots for sure, right? He's the star player there. Malik Collins is the veteran that the 49ers traded for from the Houston Texans. I think he's actually impressed a lot. I've liked what he's done. A couple spin moves during one-on-one drills from Malik Collins have popped off the tape. I mean, he is a robust guy, big body, but I think he can move as well. Not a bad player. I think that if you took prime Eric Armstead and compared it to prime Malik Collins, and the 49ers hoping they're getting a prime Malik Collins, but obviously Eric Armstead was probably a little bit past his prime just because of the injuries, you'd say that Eric Armstead was a more impactful player. But the 49ers didn't have that choice yet anymore this offseason. It was Eric Armstead who was dealing with considerable availability issues, and it was a Malik Collins who's been much more durable as of late. Also, the Eric Armstead, who's dealing with more serious availability issues, was not as good against the run as he had been a couple years ago. And I think that's really, really significant to note. DJ Jones was a presence for the 49ers. And I'm going to put this interview up if I haven't yet. Maybe I have, and you can go check it out if it's up there. But when I talked to Chris Kocurek, the 49ers defensive line coach, the other day, I said, you know, I've seen Shaquel Brown, I've seen Evan Anderson, T.Y. McGill's one of the defensive tackles on this team, Kalia Davis, Jordan Elliott, Malik Collins. And I said, do you feel that in the body types that you have with Malik Collins, I think he's a little bit wider, he's shorter but wider than Eric Armstead. Jordan Elliott, definitely wider than Eric Armstead. Also wider than Javon Kinlaw. So when you talk about these two new additions, Malik Collins and Jordan Elliott, I asked Chris Kocurek if he thinks he's got a little bit more of what he needs for run defense, for that just the stout presence in the middle, the absorbing blocks, but not only doing that, but moving bodies too. Asked him if he feels he has a little bit more of that relative to what he had with Eric Armstead and Javon Kinlaw, two longer guys, right? Two guys who were 6'6", 6'7". Javon might have been 6'5". Yeah, Javon was built like a brick, a pillar of granite. But it was funny because you looked at the metrics last year and the pass rushing was so much better for Eric Armstead and Javon Kinlaw than the run stopping. So, and you watch the tape and I mean, the metrics reflected the tape. So the 49ers and their number 26 ranked run defense needed an improvement run defense wise. And I think that when you look at Malik Collins and when you look at Jordan Elliott, you've got two guys who are going to bring the 49ers a little bit more of that mano a mano. Let's be rigid against the run that they might not have had last year. It's really tough in this scheme because they're asking them to rush out of a wide nine. When you rush out of the wide nine, the formation is elongated. There's more space in between every down defensive lineman. And that means that every defensive lineman is going to have more ground to have to patrol and cover. So you're worried about engaging with the offensive lineman in front of you, finding a way to beat him. But then you also have to cover more ground to your left and more ground to your right if the defensive line is stretched out the way that it is to give the edge rushers that advantage. And when that's the case, it could lead to rushing lanes. It could lead to struggles against the run if your defensive linemen are not dominant. So the 49ers are looking for dominant defensive linemen in a certain technique to be able to make sure that this team is not bleeding yardage on the ground. Will that be possible, Malik Collins and Jordan Elliott? That's the bet that the 49ers have made. It can't get much worse than it was last year. And listen, I'm not blaming it all on Eric Armstead and Javon Kinlaw, who both had down years against the run. I think that it was a multifaceted problem. The 49ers obviously removed their defensive coordinator, Steve Wilks, shortly after the season. That was, you know, very, very rooted in their struggles in run defense. I think that they dedicated a lot of back seven help to the pass instead of to the run game. I think they needed to recommit to their identity, which they've done by going in-house with a defensive coordinator hire of Nick Sorensen. I think that Brandon Staley is going to add some ideas on the back end, but stopping the run to have some fun remains a paramount goal for this football team. So then we look at how some of these defensive tackles have performed for the 49ers so far in camp. And I do think that Collins, but especially Elliott, have popped off the tape. Elliott, he's bigger than I thought that he was. When I watched him in Cleveland, where he was a good run stopper, he's like number six in run stop win rate last season amongst defensive tackles. He seemed like a big guy. Maybe Cleveland had some heftier defensive linemen, so relatively he didn't look as big. But now when I see him coming in with the 49ers, I mean, this is a wide, wide defensive lineman. This is a guy that I think is going to be able to hold his own in the middle. And I asked Kurcerik about it. He said that the 49ers really do like that body type. They haven't had something close to it since DJ Jones left after 2021. And that's when their run defense started its decline to number 26 in 2023. But he also emphasized that the 49ers don't just sign big defensive tackles just so they could say they have a big body there. I mean, that used to be a thing in the NFL, right? You'd bring in a huge guy just because he probably could absorb some double teams with the sheer amount of size that he brought to the table that needed to be blocked. But the 49ers really want to make sure that the guys they bring in can also deliver pass rushing technique within the context of their scheme at that weight. So they think, obviously, Jordan Elliott is capable of that. You could look at some of the other options for the 49ers, and these are guys that are going to be competing for that fourth and final spot, which currently I think belongs to Kevin Givens. He gives you a solid floor at that defensive tackle position, but boy, somebody like Kalia Davis, you talk about a skill set that might be more than that of your typical three technique, your typical defensive tackle that is clogging up some blocks. Kalia Davis was a stack linebacker in college at University of Central Florida before he was converted to a defensive tackle. It's a conversion you never see. And he's barrel chested. He's got a big, big upper body. But it's funny because he's got skinnier legs. And those skinnier legs, those are from the days that he was a linebacker. I think it's allowed him to be, it's built some of that explosiveness. You know, he's not this big lumbering defensive tackle. It's a defensive tackle who's got explosive legs, but some of that strength in the upper body. And I'm not saying he's got weak legs. He just has more athletic looking legs. It looks like he used to be a middle linebacker, but then the upper body, you say, okay, well, this guy's a defensive tackle. They think that he can bring some of the explosiveness that DJ Jones brought to the table. Now, being actually able to convert that to NFL style production is another thing. And that's what Kalia Davis is attempting to prove this training camp. That's something that Shaquel Brown, who's another guy who's got some real size on the inside, who earned his way onto the 49ers through a tryout. That's something he's trying to prove. And it's something Evan Anderson's trying to prove. Evan Anderson, though, he's an undrafted free agent out of Florida Atlantic. And it might take a little bit longer for Evan Anderson to develop. And I think a practice squad spot might be where he ends up this year. But he's another defensive tackle to throw into the ring. You can see that the 49ers put a lot of resources into this particular position this offseason because it was a problem area for them as a defense over the past couple seasons. Ever since DJ Jones has been gone, I think it's been a problem area for them. They have to become more stout up the middle. You talk about Javon Hargrave. Well, he's a much better pass rusher than he is a run defender. And that's great. That's fine. Javon Hargrave is going to be the guy that's going to have the high win rate on the inside. That's going to supplement Nick Bosa, is going to supplement Leonard Floyd to make sure your pass rush is coming from all angles. But when that's his specialty, you got to make sure that you have other defensive linemen who specialize in the opposite thing, and that's stopping the run. Otherwise, teams are just going to be able to gash you over and over and over again. And that was an issue for the 49ers last season. So Hargrave, that's his game. But now we need to see how Jordan Elliott's game fits in within the context of the 49ers defensive line. We need to see how Malik Collins' game fits in within the context of the defensive line. I asked Kocurek, is this the biggest changeover in personnel that you've ever coached along the D-line in Detroit or with the 49ers? And he said, yes, this is the biggest changeover. And you could see that through the color coding on this chart. If you guys have any questions about the defensive line, I'm happy to answer them right now, and then we'll move on to a different position group that I pick out of random. This is some good insight. A linebacker talking about the D-line and a wide nine is good. It means they're keeping the O-line off of him. Yes, so in a wide nine, if the defensive line is occupying enough of the offensive line's attention to allow the linebackers the flow, you're in business. If the 49ers linebackers are allowed to flow, this defense will likely be very good because they've got really fast and athletic linebackers. They've got linebackers who have DB backgrounds. If you look at this linebacker depth chart for the 49ers, let's move down to this next position. Fred Warner, he played a DB-like position at BYU. It was a special position that split out onto the slot and covered guys in the pass game. Dre Greenlaw, the GPS chip said he was the fastest player on Arkansas's defense. So to be the fastest player on an SEC defense, yeah, I'm considering you an honorary defensive back, even though he's tough as a linebacker. D. Winters entered college at TCU as a wide receiver and a safety before he converted to linebacker. Demetrius Flanagan Foles was a safety in college at Arizona before he was converted to a linebacker to make it in the NFL. At this point, you get the idea. There's a lot of fast linebackers who are good in coverage for the 49ers. But that said, if you're coming at it from that angle, you might be a little bit smaller than the typical linebacker. You don't want an offensive lineman on you. You want that defensive line to occupy the offensive line so the linebackers can flow on that second level. So it all works in cohesion. The 49ers need that defensive line to be prominent enough to allow Fred Warner and company to flow behind them. Here's a great question. How is Leonard Floyd against the run? So speaking of guys who are a little bit smaller who might look like DBs or receivers, Leonard Floyd, he's 240, 245, but he's jacked, okay? Then Nick Bosa was chuckling about this the other day, talking about how strong Leonard Floyd is. So don't mistake what I'm saying right now. But Bosa, he's 270, right? Maybe 265. He's significantly heavier than Leonard Floyd. Most defensive linemen are significantly heavier than Leonard Floyd. In fact, if you walk by the 49ers D linemen at practice, just really close to them, Leonard Floyd, compared to the other guys, he just looks like a very, very strong wide receiver. And I mean that in a very complimentary way. The guy's 6'5", and he's more of the wiry strength than a typical defensive lineman. And I think that he's made an excellent career out of that because his athleticism is almost second to none at that defensive end position. The speed rush is really good. However, when you and he's able to generate a lot of those cleanup sacks because of the way that he contorts his body, the effort that he puts into plays, the conditioning that's there. He hadn't missed a game in 108 straight games, so he's an Iron Man out there on the field. But I think a lot of it's because of the body type, which is really impressive, which is unique even at that defensive end position, even in this age of downsizing defensive linemen. So you say, what's the downside to that, though? Well, the downside obviously would be, can you run straight at Leonard Floyd? He's not as good of a run defender as he is a pass rusher. But if you put on the tape from the time with the Rams, especially, Leonard Floyd was, and the Bears before that, more of an outside linebacker role, though, in the past. Now he's putting his hand down in the dirt with the 49ers in the 4-3. Did a little bit more of it in Buffalo last year. But Leonard Floyd has managed well against the run. Somebody like Dee Ford, who was 240, but he was shorter than Leonard Floyd, that's a guy that struggled against the run. That was a pass rushing specialist. Leonard Floyd is more than a pass rushing specialist. Now, how is he going to transition into what the 49ers are running? That's what I can't wait to see. That's what I asked Chris Kocurek the other day. In the past, it had been probably an 80-20 or even a 90-10 split before Buffalo. In Chicago, where he worked with Brandon Staley, who was the outside linebackers coach there, who's now on the 49ers staff. And with the Rams, where obviously he worked with Brandon Staley again, the defensive coordinator, Leonard Floyd would line up standing up. It was a 3-4. So he's an outside linebacker in a 3-4. He's not putting his hand in the grass. Then in Buffalo, it was more of a 50-50 split last year because they run four down, or the 49ers run four down. But in Buffalo, they would run Leonard Floyd with a hand in the dirt more often than he did in Chicago and with the Rams. And it's a completely different technique, right? A lot of players, though, once they put their hand in the dirt in a system like the 49ers that's running the wide nine, that's encouraging the guys to get off the ball, that, you know, really values edge rushers with speed, a lot of guys, once they start doing that more often, they're like, oh, my God, I wish I would have been doing this for my whole career. And to me, I haven't had a chance to talk to Leonard about it yet, but Chris Kocurek thinks that the transition is happening very smoothly for Leonard Floyd. And he thinks that the buildup of the snaps with the hand down in the dirt, where he can get that track start, you know, that get off of the line of scrimmage, he thinks the buildup of those snaps in Buffalo last year really helped him. And I think watching the tape of those snaps in Buffalo for the 49ers also gave him a little bit more conviction on Leonard Floyd. Brandon Staley knows the guy from the Bears. He can attest to the fact that he's decent against the run. I don't think he's a liability against the run. Staley knows him from his time with the Rams. And the 49ers have watched a lot of tape from Buffalo last year when he was putting his hand in the dirt. We've got Jim Everett, the local Rams fan here. I know that he trolls most of the time, but maybe Jim Everett can give us a scouting report on Leonard Floyd since he saw him play so many years. I mean, Jim Everett, he may or may not be from Visalia. We're not sure. He always talks about the In-N-Out Burger on Mooney Boulevard. I wish he would talk a little bit more about Leonard Floyd instead of talking crap in the comment section. You know, Jim Everett's usually pretty cool, though. I like the fact we got a resident Rams fan in here. It makes for a fun time, but it'd be much more useful if he actually gave us some thoughts on Leonard Floyd. I'm giving him a chance, so it should be fun. He's getting called out now in the comment section. Laughing out loud. Rams fans don't actually watch the games. That's true. when you go to a Rams game at SoFi Stadium, if it's against the 49ers, you don't see many of them there. So maybe they aren't watching. I'm not sure. All right. We are moving forward. Yeah, some people are saying they block Jim. Other people are saying that Jim is good people. You know, based on what I've seen, sometimes he's antagonizing people, but sometimes it just seems like good-natured back and forth fun. So not bad. As he says, some people take it to heart. So, Jim, I really, really would like to hear about Leonard Floyd, if you could provide us your thoughts on him as a Rams fan. But so far, I think the 49ers have been really happy with him. He's been super consistent over the course of the past 4 years. He got 10 sacks in each of those seasons. So really good-looking player over the course of his career. He's on the 49ers now. We got Badger saying, L.A.'s a Chargers town. Jim Harbaugh's there. Jim Harbaugh's trying to make L.A. A Chargers town, that's for sure. Hey, I'm making sure, by the way, that my hat is straight this time. I have to always check the screen right here. The screen is not directly at the camera. As you can tell, I'm looking at the camera right now. Now I could look at the screen, and it's hard to make sure if the hat is straight or not. I kind of have to look out the side of my eye. So you guys can always yell at me if my... It's not straight? No, I think it's straight. It's definitely straight right now. You're kidding if you're saying it's not straight. All right, let's go. How is Devondre Campbell doing? You know, there was a... I talked about it about 7-8 days ago. There was a play where he kept up with Christian McCaffrey coming out of the backfield, and I was impressed. There's other plays where I see him getting beaten by running backs. Really... Devondre Campbell has a resume in this league, so I don't think he has to go out and show it in the preseason or anything. It's going to be how well he holds up over the course of the season and how well he moves. Well, and that those two obviously go together hand in hand. Devondre Campbell was an All-Pro in 2021. Funny enough, the year that he was an All-Pro, on the game-winning drive for the 49ers at Lambeau Field against Devondre Campbell and the Packers, Garoppolo hit George Kittle in the slot when he was matched up in one-on-one against Devondre Campbell. I'm not holding that against Devondre, though, because it's really damn hard to cover George Kittle. Like, George Kittle is a freak. George Kittle is, you know, a receiver in a tight end's body. We'll put it that way. I mean, he's bigger and stronger than receivers, but he's just as quick as a lot of them. So it's really tough for a linebacker to cover. And as soon as Garoppolo... in the snow, remember, it was a snow globe game. As soon as he saw George Kittle lined up against Devondre Campbell, a man, that was the obvious read to go to. That was Green Bay's mistake. Maybe that's why Devondre was not too kind to the coaching staff on his way out of Green Bay. Maybe they put him into too many bad situations like that. But Devondre last year gave up, you know, it was two seasons after he was an All-Pro with the Packers. Devondre Campbell gave up the highest passer rating into his coverage of any qualifying linebacker in football. So obviously his performance was not as good last year as it had been prior. You could say, okay, he hit the 30-year-old mark. He's headed downhill. That's when a lot of NFL guys start to decline. Sure, that some of that might have been at play. There also might have been a falling out between him and the coaching staff. Maybe he thought they weren't using him correctly, and that led to an erosion of play on the field. Could have been some injury issues that we don't specifically know about with Devondre Campbell. Could have been a lot of different things. The bottom line is that he was there. He was available for the 49ers in a way that he wouldn't have been available for them after his 2021 All-Pro season. So which Devondre Campbell will the 49ers get, or what degree of play are they going to get for him? That's a very big question entering this season, because when you do look at the depth chart, you've got Greenlaw and Pup, so you slot Campbell up to that second linebacker spot. But they're running the young guys very, very frequently now, especially with some of the injuries that we've seen at practice. So that's Dee Winters and Jalen Graham. Demetrius Flanagan Foles, I think, is the 49ers' third linebacker when you discount the second-year guys, Winters, Graham, and the rookie, Tatum Bethune. He's the safe option. DFF is the safe option. So it's Campbell at the two, DFF at the three, but then you have D Winters and Jalen Graham bidding for the three. And then as soon as one of those guys grabs the number three role, which the 49ers hope will happen, they'll try to usurp Devondre Campbell for the two role or the three role when Dre Greenlaw is back. So when Greenlaw slots back in right here, then Campbell moves to the three. But by that point, does Winters or Graham surpass Campbell? Campbell's job is simply to bridge the gap until he's like a bridge linebacker. Instead of a bridge quarterback, he's a bridge linebacker. Bridge the gap until D. Winters or Jalen Graham can build enough trust with the coaching staff to be at that spot. So I think it's really interesting. I think that we've seen some good things from Devondre Campbell. I don't think I could fully evaluate it until I actually see him on the field live tackling, because that doesn't happen during training camp practices. All right, I'm looking to see if we have any questions in here. I haven't eaten dinner yet. Today was my return to my swimming career. I took about a month off and got back into Bay. And the Bay, it was intimidating getting back in after some time. You build up like this courage and this toughness. First off, I get to the water, as you guys saw in the live that I did about a certain receiver. I get in the on the way in the driverless car. It goes from being sunny where I started to just wind and fog just kicking me in the face when I got out of the Dolphin Club. So then I have to get in this water for the first time in over a month with just the foggy wind and the foghorn sound coming. It was and the water's choppy. Thankfully, the water's not very cold right now relative to what it usually is, because it's the summer and it's kind of flowing down from Alaska and it's gotten a lot more heat, and water retains heat a lot better than air. That's a good thing, because if it didn't retain heat as well, then it'd be really cold because it was cold in the air. And, you know, just taking a deep breath and hitting that water and going in there and be like, oh my God, I'm in this. And there's a lot of marine life around me that I don't see. It was a little bit of a first-timer experience for me. I mean, this is something I do all the time, or I did all the time up until the past month. So successful return. I got out of the water. I'm here now. I'm talking to you guys all on the chat, and we're ready to move forward. I've got a surprise announcement to make in a few minutes, but I want to talk more about the rest of this 49ers roster. So here we go. We got a good comment here from Randall. This is a very star-laden team, but the season and potentially the team's future hinges on Purdy's ability to be a dynastic talent. There is no single player more influential than Purdy. You know, where's that emoji? I wish I knew how to type emojis on my screen. Oh, here we go. This comment right here, hopefully I could put this emoji up on the screen in the chat section. This comment from Randall McGuire is this target emoji. It is right on target. Go back to it right now. Yes, Brock Purdy is going to be a much, much bigger influence than any other player on this 49ers roster. Purdy can make the offensive line look better. If you look at data, it's really fascinating. Sacks aren't an offensive line stat. Sacks are more of a quarterback stat. They've put the same quarterback behind different offensive, different quarterbacks behind the same offensive line, and those quarterbacks have had wildly different sack rates. That's the way that you know that quarterback is the main variable in whether or not a sack is taken. A good example is the 2017 49ers. I mean, C.J. Beathard and Brian Hoyer got sacked all over the place. And then Jimmy Garoppolo, pre-ACL, Jimmy Garoppolo came in, hardly got sacked, and led the league in all efficiency categories for those final five games. It was the same offensive line, but a different quarterback. Pressures are a quarterback stat. Pressures are an O-line stat. Sacks are a quarterback stat. The point is that the QB is extremely influential. He can make your offensive line look a whole lot better. We saw that from Brock Purdy last year. He made an offensive line that wasn't great look a whole lot better. The QB can make your receivers look a whole lot better. I think, you know, Brandon Ayuk, he played for, and it says, let's talk about 49ers, not named Brandon Ayuk, but the reason I'm bringing him up is to talk about Brock Purdy. Didn't think we were going to mention Brandon Ayuk, but we had to. Brandon Ayuk has looked really damn good, and I think he's a really damn good player. But how much of him looking as good as he has been because of Brock Purdy? The media doesn't want to give Brock Purdy any credit. They say that he's carried by his teammates, but I would argue that Brock Purdy does a lot of carrying of his teammates. On a healthy team, on a healthy, good team, it's a symbiotic relationship. The teammates carry the QB, and the QB carries the teammates. That's what teamwork is all about. But if Ayuk is no longer with the 49ers moving past this season, he has to play somewhere else, we'll see just how big of an impact Brock Purdy had on his level of play. So, yes, the point from Randall is a really good one. Brock Purdy is the most influential player on this 49ers team. He pulls the most strings on the offense. He's the player that makes the offense look good, look bad. He executes Kyle Shanahan's game plan as the point guard in the middle of that unit. And then by extension, the level of play of the offense is going to determine a lot of what the defense has to deal with. Right? So the defense, somebody was telling me, well, they ranked in the top five in points per game allowed last year. I'm like, well, yeah, but they weren't a top five defense. The advanced metrics told us they're about number 10. The reason they ranked in the top five in points per game allowed is because the offense was so damn good. 49ers offense hogged the ball, so the defense wasn't on the field for as long. If the defense is not on the field for as long, they're not going to give up as many points. So by extension, Brock Purdy influences the defense very heavily as well because he's the biggest impact maker on the offense. I think that's a tremendous, tremendous point from Randall. Do I think that Purdy has a high enough ceiling to be one of the greats? Well, based on what he put on tape last year, yes. I mean, ceiling at the quarterback position. People worship the draft and the measurables of the draft to a crazy degree that they lose sight of what's actually important to succeed at the quarterback position. So much of what happens at quarterback is right here, where I'm straightening my hat to make sure I don't bug people. So much of what happens at the quarterback position happens cerebrally. Now, of course, you have to have a certain baseline of physical characteristics to be a good quarterback. You have to be able to throw the NFL route tree, which includes the deep outs thrown across the numbers. But Brock Purdy has that. His arm is strong enough to make all the throws an NFL quarterback needs to make. Two, you need to be physically durable enough to be able to take a beating, because you will in the NFL. Brock Purdy, I mean, they're calling him baby Bosa legs now. He's got that physical durability. We've seen it already. He was able to play an entire NFL season. You can't play an entire NFL season unless you've got the physical ability to be durable. And then three, it's the movement. This is where a lot of people talk about upside, and they look at a 40-yard dash, and they automatically think that a quarterback who runs a fast 40 has got some kind of crazy higher upside than other QBs. What's more important is how well you move within a short area. And not just how well you move within a short area as far as burst, but also how well you can recognize a rush. How well you can step away from rushers that you only see in your peripheral vision. How well you can sense where to move ahead of time in a pocket. Those are all really, really key movement skills from a quarterback. And Brock Purdy is elite in that regard, hands down. He moves extremely, extremely well. He knows how to manipulate the pocket. He knows how to escape the pocket. And then when he is escaping, the 10-yard split of his 40-yard dash, the 1.55, the 1.6, so somewhere around there, that is top tier. That's up there with guys who run much faster 40s than he does. And it's a much more important metric to measure QB potential than the 40-yard dash, because it measures, or more closely measures and suggests, how well he can deliver in the pocket. So, yes, Brock Purdy has all the physical tools. Then his ceiling is going to depend on how far he can take his game mentally. How tough is he going to be? How even-keeled is he going to be? How well is he going to be able to ignore, you know, all the trolls on social media that say that he's like the number 20 quarterback in the league? How's he going to be able to maybe not ignore them, but take that as positive fuel and apply it to his game? That's where Brock Purdy is going to determine whether or not he's one of the greats. It's going to be in that arena, because he has all the physical skills. There's this misconception that he may not have the physical skills to be great. He's definitely got all the physical skills. That's not a question. For those people who know football, they know that Brock Purdy, physically, there's nothing deficient about him. He has everything that he needs. But whether or not he becomes a great depends on the longevity with which he can extend. Like, he needs to be able to take what he did in 2023, and he needs to be able to extend it forward. That same efficiency over 10 years puts Brock Purdy into the Hall of Fame. That same efficiency over 7 years probably puts Brock Purdy into the Hall of Fame. So now it's a matter of adjustments and counter adjustments. It is Brock Purdy playing chess. It's a chess match against other defensive coordinators. He needs, and using the offense and the structure around him, he needs to play within what the 49ers are giving him. He needs to be that conductor on the field. That's what's going to determine whether or not he's one of the greats, what he can do from that cerebral aspect. And I think that the early returns are really, really good. You like Mason starting over Breida at number one running back until McCaffrey comes back? Yeah, well, Mason definitely has start over Breida. Although Breida had been in the system before, he's been out of the system since the 2019 season. He just got back in. Mason's been there throughout all of training camp. So when we go to the running back room, I need to highlight some of the guys that are dealing with injuries right now. I haven't done that yet. So Christian McCaffrey, pink highlight for the injury. Elijah Mitchell, pink highlight for the injury. And then, I don't know, Patrick Taylor Jr. was out of practice today. So we'll shade pink highlight. You see the running backs the 49ers have available. It is Jordan Mason, Matt Breida, Cody Schrader, and Keyshawn Vaughn, who they just signed today. So there you go. The 49ers are going to be working with guys who were projected to be backups behind Christian McCaffrey at best, and backups a little bit lower on the depth chart. Now, Jordan Mason has surged. He's surged to that two. I think he's at the two spot. I think he's sharing it with Elijah Mitchell. I think he's 2B to Elijah Mitchell's 2A. So I think that he's going to be your number one with Mitchell and McCaffrey both out. And I think you'll probably even see Cody Schrader ahead of Matt Breida. I think you'll probably see Mason first, Schrader second, assuming Patrick Taylor Jr. doesn't play, Matt Breida third, and Keyshawn Vaughn fourth during the Saturday preseason game. I'm ready for some more questions. I'm scrolling through some of these. Is the 49ers preseason game televised? Yes, I believe it is. Probably another good time to announce that we're having a subscriber meetup, fan meetup, subscriber meetup, whatever you want to call it. It's going to be ahead of the preseason game, a day ahead in Nashville on Friday. If you're in the chat right now and planning to attend 5 p.m. on Friday at the Omni Hotel, I think it's called Bar Lines, the Omni Hotel, 5 p.m. in Nashville, right off Broadway. Give me a thumbs up. I don't know if anybody is currently watching. It's going to be there, but it'd be really cool if you gave a thumbs up to the comment section. Should be really fun. We'll have a few of my friends there. Maybe we can have a couple drinks. This is going to be the day before the 49ers and the Titans play. Not buying anybody's shots, no. Maybe I will, but it'll be a surprise. That's what JT thinks. Michael Power is going to be there. That's awesome. I've met him before. That'd be really cool. Should be fun. Here's a question. How's Malik Mustafa and Renardo Green looking, and what could be their role this year? I think that Malik with, look, we're straightening the hat again. I think Malik, shout out San Francisco Fire Department, station number 13. Malik with his versatility could be a little bit like, we still got to straighten it. I think it's because I tilt my head toward the camera, so I'm not gauging it right. So Malik with his versatility might be able to grow into a little bit more of a third safety role if the 49ers start doing creative stuff with their defense. In fact, speaking of that, I should show you a couple of the articles that we've come out with this week because I think I answer some of your questions. Remember Talanoa Hufanga earned time as a rookie because of his versatility? So here we go. We did this piece right here. This was after talking to the assistant coaches. And what I did is I went up to Leonard Floyd's old coach. I went up to Brandon Staley, who coached the Rams and the Chargers and implemented a similar premise on their defense. He called it the star defensive back position. It was a versatile defensive back. This is the article, by the way. So, and we talked about Malik Mustafa because you had Jalen Ramsey in 2020 with the Rams playing outside and inside cornerback. That was a star position. We see Diamond Lenore doing that for the 49ers now. And then you had Derwin James for the Chargers playing safety and then coming down in coverage, playing a lot of man near the line of scrimmage. So, you know, my natural question is, Malik Mustafa, who was such a versatile guy playing all over the field in college, does Brandon Staley, who's doing a lot of the whiteboard stuff for the 49ers, envision him doing the same stuff for the 49ers? And the answer from Brandon Staley was not no. Let's put it that way. Brandon Staley said that first he's got to learn the safety position down pat. And then once we cut down the roster and we start thinking about where guys might plug in on the 53 on game day, we can start cross-training him at one of those rover versatile positions. So maybe Malik Mustafa turns into a weapon for the 49ers down the stretch of this season, kind of like Talanoa Hufanga was in 2021. And then Hufanga came on big in 2022 as an all-pro. I've seen really impressive blitzes from Mustafa this training camp. I've seen interceptions. I think that they're really happy with the way that he's patrolled center field. And that's, you know, worth a lot to begin because now the 49ers can start thinking about a more expansive role for Malik Mustafa. Your other questions about Renardo Green, I don't know if I have much on Renardo right now besides the fact that I talked about him earlier. He had a really nice pass breakup today against Juwan Jennings. Saw some first-team action today. But I have something on George Odom, even though you didn't ask about him. George Odom is delivering as a safety for the 49ers. You know, George, one of the best special teams players in the league. And if he can continue to be in the right place at the right time, which is a sign of him studying a lot of tape, if he can continue and keep that up the way that he has over the course of this preseason, the 49ers are going to have options at safety. Talanoa is still out, coming back from the ACL. Jair Brown is having a good camp too. Jair Brown's another guy with a nose for the football. But Odom had two interceptions at practice today. So this is the article that I wrote. You know, maybe I could even give it to Mike. I'll put this in the description and you guys, and he'll put it there. Don't want to take credit for doing that since Mike will. You guys can subscribe to The Athletic through that. Go and check it out. While everybody's here, why don't you smash that like button? Mike is adding that in. One thing I'm checking is how many subscribers we have. All right, we're at 74,691. Getting to 74,700 is a big deal. So we have nine more. So why don't everybody who's watching right now, this is probably the only show where you're going this in-depth into the 49ers roster. and we're not talking about Brandon Ayuk, which I think is pretty cool. So hit that subscribe button, hit the like button, do all you need to do. We're eight away. We are 74,692. How about I refresh and us be seven away? No, not quite. You guys, okay, now we're seven away. 693. That's cool. I have a cool announcement for everybody right now on the show. The newest 49ers fan has joined the community. He's going to be a YouTube subscriber one day of this channel. His name is George Beckett Mendonca, born in Templeton, California, on August 7th, 2024 at 6:14 p.m., just about 3 hours ago. Trent Mendonca, who is George's dad, is one of my best friends. He's a groomsman in my wedding. Trent is currently celebrating the birth of his son, George Beckett Mendonca. Hadley Mendonca, that's his mom. Congratulations to Trent and Hadley. They are both 49ers fans. Great. Trent is a great friend from back in the day where we were both in each other's weddings from Visalia. So those of you who are watching in the 559 from Visalia, you can congratulate Trent as well. But his son, George Beckett Mendonca, was born just about 3 hours ago. We all congratulate them, and we're all going to send Trent this clip over in the hospital if he is not watching right now. It was only 3 hours ago, so I'm guessing that he's got a lot of time on the phone right now. He's busy. So I'm sure that before the birth happened, I think that Trent had a little bit more downtime, but now he's busy. So everybody congratulate Trent and Hadley. We are going to send them this video. George Beckett Mendonca. Hopefully he'll get to watch this in a few years. I think it's a cool moment. Yeah, we're getting a lot of congratulations. I love that. Look at this. Now people are saying they want a Lombardi Jr. When the time comes, there will be an announcement. Joshua Blevin says, congratulations, Trent and Hadley. Happy birthday, George. I'm going to take a screenshot of my screen right here, and I'm literally going to send it to Trent right now. There he goes. Cool. Congratulations to them. You guys are awesome. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming. What do we have? 47 minutes. We're still at 74,693. Still need a few more. The newest 49ers fan. Yeah, quite literally the newest 49ers fan. He's 3 hours old. He's pretty young. Not in his prime yet, that's for sure. We are streaming live in the hospital room. That's awesome. Okay, so well, since we're streaming live in the hospital room, we could keep this up there for a little bit longer. And I'm going to look at a few other questions. Well, I'll answer a couple questions with this up there. Hello to George Beckett Mendonca, the newest 49ers fan who's 3 hours old, who is actually watching this show right now. So ask some good questions, because his first piece of 49ers knowledge in his entire life will be whatever you're feeding into this show and whatever I decide to put up on the screen. Jim Everett says that Visalia is legit. So we're hearing from a Rams fan, but I think some 49ers fans need to put in some better questions. And no, I'm not going to be talking about Brandon Ayuk. You really want to pollute George Beckett Mendonca's mind with talk about Brandon Ayuk right now? You're not sick of that yet? Come on. Let's get some good questions. I want some better questions here. How much more does Brock Purdy weigh than George Beckett Mendonca? Well, what's Purdy at? Let's look. I'm going to the 49ers roster. This might be an inexact measurement. I know Purdy's put on a few pounds of muscle this offseason. Purdy's at 220. George Beckett Mendonca is, I believe, at almost 8 pounds, 7 pounds, I think 13 ounces. So We've got 220 minus 8. Purdy is roughly 212 pounds heavier than him. Although that gap is going to start closing pretty quickly. We're going to see, you know, George Beckett Mendonca is going to be catching up. Now, he's going to be known as Beck. I know I'm calling him by his full name right now, which is kind of probably going to be funny when you rewatch this in 20 years. But he's going to be known as Beck. Beckett Beck. All right, we got some good questions now. They're rolling in. Papa J says, Mustafa's open field tackles remind me of Ronnie Lott. What do you think of his tackling skills? I love him on tape. The Wake Forest tape is a lot of fun for Malik Mustafa. Go put it on. He's like a little missile, ball of muscle. He's a missile. I haven't seen his tackling skills in a 49ers uniform yet because they haven't tackled at practice. So tune in Saturday. We'll be in Nashville. Supposedly, by the way, Trent, I heard you sent me something to my house in Nashville. Margot just started laughing and she said it was great, but she couldn't tell me what it was. So I'll see it when I get there. I'm flying there tomorrow. But anyway, that's where Mustafa is going to be making tackles on Saturday. We'll see live tackling during the preseason game. Kittle has two more years left in his deal. That's another question. Do I think that Pooney can win the starting right guard job? Yeah, considering the fact that he's been playing almost all of camp in that first team right guard spot. I mean, it's been well over a week at this point. I think Dominic Pooney could do it. Remember, he only gave up he didn't give up any sacks at Kansas, but only a couple sacks in his entire college career. Before that, it was Central Missouri. Then he went to Kansas, didn't give up a single sack. So I think Dominic Pooney is a good pass protector, and the 49ers need an upgrade in pass protection. Does Ricky Pearsall play this year? Yes, I do think Ricky Pearsall plays this year. He's a first-round pick. He's a good separator. He's a workaholic. I think Ricky Pearsall is somebody that sees the field early on. All right, that's it. Shows in honor of the newest 49ers fan, Beck, George Beckett Mendonca. Congratulations to Trent and Hadley. I'm done. I have to go eat. It's time. I was just in the Bay. When you get in cold water, especially when you're not used to it, you get hungry. That's the state that I'm in right now. We'll talk to everybody really soon.